Good morning, everybody. It is always concerning, isn't it, when the president stands up and starts summarising the talks from last week, when you've got plenty of that in your own exhortation. I think we're safe. So by way of exhortation this morning, I thought we could take a look at the themes of weakness and strength, taken from the contrasts that Paul makes in 2 Corinthians 12 and 13. So his first reference to it is halfway through chapter 12, after he describes God's refusal to take away whatever Paul's thorn in the flesh was. And he uses that to show how God was able to use those who appeared weak in person to show his strength. Verses 7 to 10 of chapter 12. And lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan, to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure. For this thing I besought the Lord thrice, that it might depart from me. And he said, My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then am I strong. So Paul has come not only to accept this answer from God, but also to rejoice in it, to emphasize his physical weaknesses in order to further display God's power. Paul continues to develop this theme further in chapter 13, verse 3. Since ye speak a proof of Christ speaking in me, which to you it is not weak, but is mighty in you, for though he was crucified through weakness, yet he liveth by the power of God. For we also are weak in him, but we shall live with him by the power of God toward you. Most modern versions will translate that through weakness as in weakness, which probably helps us determine what Paul is saying here. We see the contrast made between the physical weakness of the body and the power of God to not only resurrect the body, but also to give it greater strength in that resurrected state, which we'll come back to towards our conclusion. Now, this contrast of strength and weakness can be found throughout the Bible. So we're going to take a look through some of the more obvious examples in a reasonably chronological order, starting back in Numbers chapter 13, a time when the children of Israel were supposed to be learning that lesson. Numbers chapter 13 and verse 17. And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan, and said unto them, Get you up this way, southward, and go up into the mountain, and see the land, what it is, and the people that dwelleth therein, whether they may be strong or weak, few or many. And what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what cities they be that they dwell in, whether in tents or in strongholds. And what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether there be wood therein or not. And be ye of good courage, and bring of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. Now we know what the end result was. The spies return with the message that the land is strong. Too strong, in fact, for them to overthrow. There were giants. But we know that the two faithful spies understood the lesson. God has said that they will have the land. It does indeed flow with milk and honey. And therefore God will strengthen them to drive out the current inhabitants. Despite the miracles that the children of Israel had witnessed in the recent past, they were unable to see past the physical strength of the inhabitants of the land, and so were condemned to wander in the wilderness whilst that generation died. It's interesting, therefore, that the first chapter of Joshua is dedicated to that message of strength as they stand on the edge of the land a second time, ready to go in. Joshua chapter 1 and verse 1. Now after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, thou and all this people, unto the land which I do give to them, even to the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given you, as I said unto Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, even unto the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, unto the great sea toward the going down of the sun shall be your coast. There shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. Be strong and of a good courage, for unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers to give them. Only be thou strong and very courageous. The contrast this time is that in sending the spies to Jericho, it is those on whom that they were spying that are those who are feeling weak in the face of the strength of Israel, as Brother TJ showed us in the account of Rahab last week. And then, once Israel get into the land, we get a few more accounts of strength. And I'd like to look at briefly at both Gideon and Samson. So in Judges chapter 6, we are introduced to Gideon. Verses 11 and 12 of Judges 6. And there came an angel of the Lord and sat under an oak which was in Ophrah, that pertained unto Joash the Abiezrite, and his son Gideon threshed wheat by the winepress to hide it from the Midianites. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him, and said unto him, The Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor. So the thing I want us to note here is that there is no sign of Gideon being a weak person. Rather, he is described as a mighty man of valor. But I think that the main story that we think of in terms of Gideon demonstrates this contrast of strength and weakness. In chapter 7, we have the account of Gideon reducing the size of his army, whittling them down till there are only 300 men from the 32,000 that he began with. And we think it's probably not 300 warriors, it's 300 middle-of-the-road people. They weren't those who had gone home and they were given the first opportunity because they were scared, but nor were they the experienced warriors to drink from the river in a sensible way. God is very explicit at the beginning of chapter 7 and verse 2. And the Lord said unto Gideon, The people that are with thee are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, Mine own hand hath saved me. We see that God wanted to use the weakness of men to show his power, and so they do with God's carefully orchestrated plan. The next obvious person to look at in a theme of weakness and strength is Samson over in Judges chapters 13 to 16. We have this image, I think, of Samson as somehow Israel's equivalent of Goliath, but we don't really have anything to base that on. What we know is that it was in God's spirit that gave him the strength. I don't think that Samson experienced some sort of immediate muscular dystrophy when Delilah cut his hair and he shrank back to being the size of a normal human being. It is another lesson in God providing strength to mortal man. In Judges chapter 16 and verse 26, we get the final account of Samson. Judges 16 verse 26. And Samson said unto the lad that held him by the hand, Suffer me that I may feel the pillars whereupon the house standeth, that I may lean upon them. Now the house was full of men and women, and all the lords of the Philistines were there. And there were upon the roof about 3,000 men and women, that beheld while Samson made sport. And Samson called unto the Lord and said, O Lord God, remember me, I pray thee, and strengthen me, I pray thee, only this once, O God, that I may be at once avenged of the Philistines for my two eyes. And Samson took hold of the two middle pillars upon which the house stood, and on which it was borne up, of the one with his right hand, and of the other with his left. And Samson said, Let me die with the Philistines. And he bowed himself with all his might, and the house fell upon the Lord, and upon all the people that were therein. So the dead which he slew at his death were more than they which he slew in his life. And so we see, from being a weak and broken man, out of prison he receives strength from God again. And it's another of TJ's examples from last week that I'd like to consider next, and that's in the story of Ruth. We saw with TJ last week the contrast between the weakness at the beginning and the strength at the end. Ruth chapter 1 and verse 1. Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land. And a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, the name of his wife Naomi, and the name of his two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah. And they came into the country of Moab and continued there. So what we saw last week was that the names in Ruth have very significant meanings, and that's all that we're going to look at this time. You will recall that Naomi means pleasantness, and Elimelech means my God is king. And then there's the contrast with the names of their two sons, Mahlon meaning sickness, and Chilion meaning wasting away. We saw that Naomi's name she changed to Mara, meaning bitterness. What we can also see is that Boaz means in him is strength. And so the contrast that we see is that Ruth moves from someone who was weak and wasting away to someone with strength. The final Old Testament example I'd like to think about is David and Goliath. Here in our Sunday school stories, we see the ultimate contrast of weakness and strength. Now, we know it's not really like that. David was no weakling. He was able to wear Saul's armour without it seeming ridiculous. But the contrast is there for a reason, and relative to Goliath, David is definitely the weak one by any human standards. 1 Samuel chapter 17 and verse 42. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, and ruddy, and of a fair countenance. And the Philistine said unto David, Am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, Come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air, and to the beasts of the field. So we notice here that David is described as looking a bit young. He's not weak and small. But once again we see that it is God who gives the strength. Continuing in verse 45. Then said David to the Philistine, Thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. In verse 49. And David put his hand in his bag and took thence a stone and slung it and smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his forehead, and it fell upon his face to the earth. Goliath didn't recognize the true God, and so it cost him. And this folly of not recognizing that God is empowering people is something that will continue until the last days. we see the call in Joel, go out to the nations that come against Israel in Joel chapter 3. Joel chapter 3 and verse 9. Proclaim ye this among the Gentiles. Prepare war, wake up the mighty men. Let all the men of war draw near, let them come up. Beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I am strong. Assemble yourselves and come, all ye heathen, and gather yourselves together round about. Thither cause thy mighty ones to come down, O Lord. And whilst what we've seen throughout the examples that we've looked at is that it's entirely possible for the weak to become strong, it is only enabled by God. We too have this hope to come from a physical perspective. Isaiah chapter 35 and verse 3. Strengthen ye the weak hands and confirm the feeble knees. Say to them that are of a fearful heart, be strong, fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance, even God with a recompense. He will come and save you. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. Then shall the lame man leap as an hart, and the tongue of the dumb sing. This hope, however, is only enabled by an act which is the focus of our meeting this morning, an act that is confusing for many. Paul talks about this in 1 Corinthians in chapter 1, verse 27. God has chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise. And God has chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty. The base things of the world and the things which are despised hath God chosen, yea, and things which are not, to bring to naught things that are, that no flesh should glory in his presence. We see again Paul's language of the weak and the strong. It is the contrast between the physical and the spiritual. And it is only heightened through the language that Paul uses elsewhere in his letters. Firstly, the contrast between the created and the invented in Galatians chapter 4. Galatians 4 and verse 8. Howbeit then, when you knew not God, ye did service unto them which by nature are no gods. But now, after that ye have known God, or rather are known of God, how turn ye again to the weak and beggarly elements, whereunto ye desire again to be in bondage? Here Paul is making that contrast between the worship of the idols which were created by man, and the worship of the real God, and wondering why they were trying to mix both together or simply return to those things that are man-made. Paul is making the point that those things which are made are weak, but that knowing God and being known of God is where strength lies. A few pages over in Ephesians, it is Paul who is debasing himself and projecting extreme weakness onto himself. Ephesians chapter 3 and verse 7. Verse 6. That the Gentiles should be fellow heirs and of the same body, and partakers of his promise in Christ by the gospel, whereof I was made a minister, according to the gift of the grace of God, given unto me by the effectual working of his power. Unto me, who am less than the least of all saints, is this grace given. That I should preach among the Gentiles the unsearchable riches of Christ, and to make all men see what is the fellowship of the mystery, which from the beginning of the world hath been hid in God, who created all things by Jesus Christ. we see once again that reinforcement of the message of 2 Corinthians in Paul being the least of all, but preaching the message of power that is made available through Jesus by God. It is this mechanism that we come to remember now in the symbols of the new covenant before us on the table. Paul contrasts these two covenants for us in Romans 8, pointing out that it is the same weakness that was crucified to allow the strength of God to reveal his righteousness to all. Romans chapter 8 and verse 2. For the law of the Spirit of life in Christ Jesus hath made me free from the law of sin and death. For what the law could not do, and that in that it was weak through the flesh, God, sending his own Son in the likeness of sinful flesh, and for sin, condemned sin in the flesh, that the righteousness of the law might be fulfilled in us, who walk not after the flesh, but after the Spirit. So we come to remember these emblems before us on the table with the contrast of strength and weakness. Just conclude back in 2 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 4. For though he was crucified through weakness, yet he liveth by the power of God. For we also are weak in him, but we shall live with him by the power of God toward you.